Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Who Stole Your Loan radio show. My name is Anthony Martinez, and as you guys know, I've been kind of doing this radio show for a little while. I've been a little MIA for a little while because I've been spending a lot of time in the courtrooms with some great attorneys throughout the state of Florida, really digging into a lot of this foreclosure defense work and trying to figure out what's working, what's not working, and coming up with the best foreclosure defense strategies to help people across the state. And today we will be talking about what we're calling the 2016 fraud closure. And that's not foreclosure, that's fraud closure. And are you ready to defend? Again, my name is Anthony Martinez. I am your host. And I am here with the wonderful Kelly Bosecker, attorney Kelly Bosecker out of Tampa, Florida. Kelly, how are you?
Hi, Anthony. How are you doing today?
I am doing well today. Kelly is an outstanding litigator. I'm going to say some things that may make her blush throughout the radio show, but she is what I would like to say one of the best litigators that I've seen in the courtroom. She's tenacious. She's not scared. She's not timid. I've seen her yell at some judges. I've seen her yell at opposing counsel from time to time, but she is by far one of the greatest advocates of foreclosure defense throughout the state of Florida. And as we go through the show and we talk about some of the topics that we'll be covering today, I'm gonna say some things and kind of put some of Kelly's information out there for you guys who are interested in retaining a great foreclosure defense attorney. Kelly is not limited to the state, to the Tampa area. She is a traveler. She can handle cases throughout the state of Florida. She is connected with attorneys throughout the state of Florida to be able to handle anything throughout the state of Florida. So if you're looking for a great foreclosure defense attorney, Kelly Bosecker comes highly recommended. She can be reached at 813-334-1745. Again, that's 813-334-1745. Or you can email Kelly at Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, at BosekerLaw.com. And that's BosekerLaw.com. Kelly, today we're going to talk about just a few topics. We've got about 10 topics that we probably won't cover within the hour. So we're going to get into some general discussion about some of these topics. I'll just run them through very quickly. One is whether or not attorney or pro se, what's the right approach? We see a lot of pro se's in the courtrooms these days. We see less and less good foreclosure defense attorneys. And part of that, part of the topic I wanted to talk to you about is how does a borrower, how does someone in foreclosure really get to understand choosing the right attorney? Because, you know, the state of Florida has over 95,000 attorneys licensed to practice law in the state of Florida, but finding a good defense attorney is a lot different from someone who's just licensed to practice. Would you agree?
I definitely agree, Anthony, and I think that the first, thank you for all the nice comments. I'm not certain that that you aren't a little bit prejudiced, but I appreciate that. And I am certainly a zealous advocate. I definitely believe that there's an injustice, happening in our country. The banks, the lenders have violated a number of laws over a number of years. They've oversold mortgages. They've encouraged people to refinance based on values of property that were inflated. They marketed loans to people who shouldn't have qualified for loans, including having non-citizens assert that they were citizens in order to qualify for loans. And they have paid billions of dollars to the federal government and also millions to the states. And the taxpayers
That's a good point. And apologies for cutting you off. Something you just mentioned there. You said they've paid billions of dollars. So, And we just saw that. I think we were just reading an article the day before yesterday came out. Wells Fargo settled for like $1.2 billion or something like that with authorities. And again, related to fraud allegations with respect to secondary market loans and so on and so on. And prior to that, we saw, Goldman Sachs settle for $5 billion. So we're seeing these, we're seeing all of these different settlements, settling these frauds throughout the country related to secondary market loans and this whole foreclosure mess. So I just wanted to point that out to the listeners that, we're seeing billions and billions. But how does that affect the courtroom? How does that affect you as a litigator in the courtroom?
Well, the whole issue is, Anthony, is that, the system is set up so, the banks have admitted that they violated the rules. The settlements are primarily based on violations of the federal securities laws and the federal banking laws. And what's happening to all those billions of dollars that's being paid to the federal government? And, there have been some tax dollars as well that have been allocated to bail out the banks. And in the tax legislation in 2008, the language of the bill actually said, lenders, and they were defined as those institutions that receive taxpayer monies. And I know for sure that Bank of America, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Ally Bank, which took over for GMAC Mortgage, received taxpayer dollars. Well, it said shall, S-H-A-L-L, do principal reduction mortgages. Anthony, I've been doing this primarily for about 5 years, and I've seen less than 10 principal reduction mortgages in about 500 cases. So
wow.
They're not
so that's
doing
it,
them.
Yeah, that's interesting, and you're being very specific. So obviously you have a knowledge base about, these federal regulations and the law and how they should be applying principal reduction. And all of that taps into the whole loan modification aspect and what we're not seeing with HAMP and HARP and, a lot of people that should have been able to keep their homes through loan modification, but it's not happening. So that's interesting. Your knowledge base is very specific. What do you think about other lawyers that you see in the courtroom, foreclosure defense lawyers?
I think there's a variety, and I kind of got off the topic, but I was trying to make a point, and that is, I think it's important within our system to have a good attorney. That being said, however, I really respect the pro se, people who are really trying to learn the law and represent themselves in their case, and I think that that's so important because if the borrower, the defendant, has knowledge of what's going on, they should be able to know and help select, a good attorney. I think the most important thing is for the prospective client, does the attorney focus on foreclosure defense? Or do they have a substantial practice, substantial part of their practice that's foreclosure defense?
That's a great point.
How many foreclosure trials?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. You've got a lot of general practitioners that do everything from dog bites to divorce to, you name it, all the way up through foreclosure defense, anything to make some money. Obviously, those are not the right attorneys to choose. And you know what? Let me say this. Let me not say that they're not the right attorney to choose. You can't judge a book by its cover per se. What I will say is this, and Kelly, you tell me if I'm wrong. In my experience in dealing with attorneys and litigation overall, I found that there are three types of attorneys. There are attorneys that are very good at writing, there are attorneys that are very good at research, and then there are attorneys that are good litigators. They're great in the courtroom. They can sell a judge the shoes off their feet. And when you have personal injury lawyers, people that spend a tremendous amount of time in the courtroom actually litigating, I've found throughout my experience that those are the types of attorneys that are best outside of someone who just specifically does foreclosure defense, right? You're someone who just does foreclosure defense for the most part, but more importantly, you do litigation. You're a litigator and you spend a tremendous amount of time in the courtroom. So, I would certainly say, and I would certainly agree with you that, while you should definitely be cautious of of practitioners that practice, you know, all types of areas of law. A good litigator is really what you're going to need in foreclosure defense. Would you agree?
Pretty much so, yes. And again, I mean, I think the whole thing is, you know, how many foreclosure cases have they handled? And I will tell you another thing I think that's important is, are they really going to fight? Because I know of a number of lawyers out there who are doing foreclosure defense that don't think that they can and they have some justification for that based on how the foreclosure case system in this state works, because it's very difficult to win, but you can win, Anthony, as you and I know, because we have won several foreclosure trials together, a number of
them.
It is difficult, but they have to be willing to fight. And I know a number of lawyers that their primary focus is let's get them a loan modification. And a loan modification is a totally appropriate result in some situation. It's also a great backup plan, you know, in the event that that you lose a case. But I really think that the most important thing is the attorney willing to fight the fight?
Sure. So you've got attorneys out there you have attorneys out there that are representing that they're foreclosure defense lawyers, but really don't actually believe in the defenses that need to be asserted to be able to be successful at either getting a case dismissed or prevailing at trial.
Yep, I agree. I think that's true.
Good point. Well, here's what I will say on the topic. I think that we've come a long way from 2006 to 2016. Over the last 10 years of watching foreclosure evolve and watching no case law to having, you know, a tremendous amount of case law throughout, not just the five DCAs throughout the state of Florida, but just across all judicial and non-judicial states throughout the country. We're seeing, and thanks to the pro sayers, right? I mean, a tremendous amount. I mean, look at the blogs that are out there right now. Some are through attorneys, but some are also through pro sayers. There's a lot of information out on the internet. Some good, some bad. Most, you know, tries to hone in and point you in the right direction. But I would say that pro sayers today are very, very educated when it comes to foreclosure, because it was their homes that were being foreclosed on. So, you know, when you're talking about millions of homes across America basically being stolen, homeowners got, you know, borrowers got very, very, very savvy. They got educated so much more that they dedicated a lot of their study specific to foreclosure, whereas foreclosure attorneys really don't. So here's what I would say on the topic. I would certainly say that my first recommendation is always going to be, if you are in foreclosure or you're just being served or you know you're about to be served, I recommend that you always hire an attorney. That's always going to be my first, my first recommendation to anyone. But at the same time, it's your property. You're well vested in that property. I always recommend that you have a sense of knowledge base so that you can have intelligent conversations while you're vetting an attorney to determine if that is the right attorney that you're going to need to be able to handle the, you know, what your foreclosure case entails. So absolutely, I would certainly say that. I want to continue to move on to some of these topics because they're all relevant, and I kind of want to just jump through them.
Let me say one more thing on this issue, sure, if you would, please. The only other thing I'd like to say is that you know, the real hard thing about being a pro se person and going to trial is that there are so many procedural rules that could so totally adversely affect your case if you don't follow them. And I've been an attorney for 30 years, and I get stuck by them every now and then. So that would be my biggest concern about a pro se person actually taking a case to trial.
And that's a great point, right? So for all you pro sayers out there that may be reading all of this stuff on the internet and may, you know, be kind of indulged in all of this fraud, closure fraud, and you know, all the things that you think apply to your case, Kelly makes a great point. The reality is that when you step into that courtroom, when you're dealing with motion filing, there are civil rules of procedure throughout every state that govern these courts and the procedures and evidence and so on. And if you're not fluent in the rules of procedure, if you're not fluent in the rules of evidence, if you're not fluent in how these motions are to be drafted and the timely filing of them and so on, you're putting yourself at one huge disadvantage. So again, the recommendation is always going to be to hire an attorney, hire a competent attorney, and you do your due diligence to make sure that the attorney you're hiring is competent. So yeah, Kelly, I agree with you 100%. Absolutely. You know, there's a topic that I wanted to touch on, which is the next topic. You know, when foreclosures took place back 2006, 2007, every foreclosure case basically had a lost note count. So here they brought a foreclosure action. They said they didn't have possession of the original note, and they filed this lost note count without a lost note affidavit. And then somewhere along the line during trial, all of a sudden, you know, this lost note appeared. And we came into some, you know, we started coming into these things about fabrications of the original note and, you know, submitting color copies and all kinds of crazy stuff. And here was the interesting thing, Kelly, and if you recall, since you're a Florida attorney, the Florida Supreme Court introduced this foreclosure residential task force to basically investigate this whole foreclosure mess. And when they were going through, you know, setting up this foreclosure task force, the Florida Banking Association filed a brief and came in and said, hey, we can give you a little background here so that you understand what's going on with the banks and why you're seeing all of these lost note counts. And the reason why you're seeing these lost note counts is because the original notes were destroyed from the very beginning, okay? And the reason why they were destroyed was because they had this new MERS system, mortgage electronic registration system. The documents were going to all be maintained in electronic format. They were going to be, you know, they were going to travel as fast as the money, and that had to be electronically. So you had the Florida Banking Association step up and say, hey, the reason why you see all of these lost note counts is because all of the original notes were destroyed. Now let's fast forward. Here we are, 2015, 2016. Kelly, for the last 3 years, all of a sudden, every single complaint now has an original note. How is that?
Gee, Anthony, I wish I could really answer that question. If I was a banker, I guess I could. I think that, I mean, I remember reading the affidavit filed by the Florida Bankers Association very well. I've read it a number of times, and it clearly said that the notes are destroyed, and that was a typical practice in the banking industry at the time. And part of that was as a result of MERS, the creation of the Mortgage Electronic Registration System. And the banks really did that because they were trying to avoid paying documentary taxes on transfers of loans. That's why the MERS system was really created. And MERS basically converted a paper system of notes to an electronic system of notes. I've had one case, you know, over the past 5 years, where the bank actually produced an e-note as the only evidence of the debt between the lender and the alleged borrower. And that was an interesting case. Unfortunately, we didn't have much success winning it when we should. But, I mean, I can't say for certain because I'm not a banker and I'm not privy to what goes on behind the closed doors. The affidavit filed by the Florida Banking Association clearly said we don't keep the notes. The MERS system indicates that they don't keep the notes. But yet, you know, they're producing notes. And I do believe that some of them are original documents. And I believe that in a number of situations, the lenders are just so large, they have no idea what's going on, and they warehouse these documents. And in fact, I'm aware of at least 5 facilities across the country that all they do is warehouse original notes or evidence of indebtedness for lenders. Not just whole houses, all kinds. So I think at some point, to a certain extent, the banks didn't realize they had the original documents, that they had been warehoused, and they actually produced original documents that had been warehoused in these facilities. But I think also to a large degree that there are a number of ways these days that you can produce a document that looks like the real thing and that totally isn't.
Sure. And interestingly enough, right, look at the Countrywide litigation. There was testimony from top executives at Countrywide that made clear that the notes never moved. They never moved. So very right. Interesting that, you know, here we are in 2015, 2016, and we are now seeing original notes being filed. You know, perfect example, the heightened requirements now by statute. You know, in your state, the state of Florida, as an example, Florida legislator implemented 702.015 Florida statute, and that was effective as of July of 2013. That heightened the requirement, right? They said, hey, no more lost note affidavits per se, or rather, no more lost note counts. I mean, you can have a lost note count, but you got to have the affidavit, et cetera. But they heightened the level of standing, right? They said, if you're going to file a foreclosure complaint, you must be in possession of the original note. You must submit a certification of possession of the original note. And that's what we have now. We're seeing now foreclosure cases where, you know, they have the complaint, they have the certification, and here's the copy of a note with a series of endorsements in it. So I'm kind of baffled just a little bit, and I just wonder in your experience as well, because here we have, you know, a few years ago, all the notes were destroyed, and now today, all the notes have reappeared. You know, we've seen articles, newspaper articles about the banks creating these machines or investing in these machines that can rewrite someone's signature in blue ink. You know, as you know, my company AMA and eLogic Group does note examination, where we go in and we take a look at a note and we zero in through microscope the ability to be able to see if it's a color copy of a document, if there's any forensic issue associated with each of the pages of the document. We've come across and we've seen fabricated documents. Do you think these certifications and these documents that are being submitted, do you think that the banks are still introducing fraudulent documents or altered documents of sorts?
Anthony, you and I have had at least a couple of cases where, you know, your company did the analysis, and the analysis clearly showed that the notes were reproductions.
Sure.
Also had a couple of cases in Orange County, Florida, with a gal who's a handwriting analyst who found at least two or three notes that clearly were not signed by the borrower. I think it's all the same thing, Anthony. They're going to do whatever they, being the lenders, are going to do whatever they need to do to try to collect on the notes. I believe that the new legislation under 702.015 is great, but here's what I'm seeing now. The certification provisions of that statute say the plaintiff must certify possession of the original note. The plaintiff must verify the complaint, et cetera, and it must set forth the owner and the holder. Well, what I see all the time now is that these certifications are done by law firms and or loan servicers, and that's not what the statute says. The statute says the plaintiff.
Another way for
the lenders to try to get around, you know, what the law actually says.
Now, is it the lenders or is it the actual foreclosure mill law firm? I mean, let's talk about that for a quick second. You know, the officers of the court, you're sworn to duty, right? You can't file false pleadings to the court. You can't, you simply can't engage in that kind of stuff, right? So why are we seeing this stuff? Why are we, you know, if the statute reads the plaintiff, why is the... And let me just point out, especially in the state of Florida, it's become clear that it's the servicer that's facilitating the foreclosure and not the actual named plaintiff, like Deutsche Bank as trustee or Wells Fargo as trustee. It's always some you know, some servicer that's actually facilitating the whole thing in their name. So how is it that these guys are coming in and these law? Why are the law firms taking the risk? Why are these attorneys taking the risk of signing their name on documents on the penalty? You know, in some cases on the penalty of perjury, but just as an officer of the court signing their name to a document, why would they do that?
Anthony, you know, I really can't answer that question except to say because the banks are so powerful and they can get by with it. As I'm sure you're aware, in the state of Florida, the David Stern law firm, who was a bank counsel firm in South Florida, was found guilty of creating assignments of mortgage, you know, robo-signing documents, notarizing documents that improperly to try to prove that there was a right to foreclose. I believe Mr. Stern himself was disbarred. A number of his attorney employees were sanctioned and or suspended. There was also the Marshall Watson law firm in South Florida who was also suffered the same kind of penalties and sanctions. However, I understand that basically most of the Marshall Watson law firm, notwithstanding that they weren't supposed to be in business anymore, basically incorporated under a new name and are still operating as bank counsel.
And that was his brother. That was his brother that actually, if I'm not mistaken, Choice Legal or something like that.
Yes, I think that's the correct name. I can't explain it. I can't explain how they can get by with it. I can't explain how the banks have violated all the securities laws and the banking laws. They've paid billions of dollars to the government. Where are the dollars that come to the homeowners that have suffered? I mean, that's
sure.
My biggest issue. Why are the dollars going to the federal government for fines and whatever, and no money is coming down to help?
Sure. And we were with Kelly Bosecker, attorney Kelly Bosecker, out of Tampa, Florida. For those of you just tuning in, this is Anthony Martinez. I am your host. We are on with Kelly Bosecker, attorney out of Tampa, Florida, who is a prominent foreclosure defense attorney, great litigator, very tenacious, has done hundreds of foreclosure cases throughout the state of Florida. For those of you that need a foreclosure defense attorney like Ms. Bosecker, she can be reached at 813-334-1745. Again, her phone number is 813-334-1745. And if you want to just shoot her an email, she can be reached at kelly@bosecerlaw.com. And that's kelly@bosecerlaw.com. Again, this is Anthony Martinez, your host, Who Stole Your Loan Radio. We are talking about 2016 fraud closure and are you ready to defend? You know, we are 10 years into foreclosure defense at this point since the housing market meltdown back 2006, 2007. And we are in the midst of what we are calling the next foreclosure wave. We are now getting into a part of foreclosure where the seven-year arms are up on some of these loans. You're starting to see the next wave of foreclosures. And what you're seeing is an influx of defaults. Much, you know, just as where we were in 2006, 2007, borrowers are getting these default notices. But what you're not seeing is the rampant foreclosure filings as you did in 2006, 2007, 2008, because there's a heightened requirement now to be able to foreclose. So let's be clear, foreclosures are on the rise. The filings are not on the rise as much as they would normally be had these new statutes not been implemented. But be very clear, the defaults are going on. People are getting those letters and foreclosure is imminent. So when we talk about 2016 fraud closure and are you ready to defend, what we're talking about is, you know, are you prepared? Is your information base and knowledge base up to par? Do you have the right attorney You know how to vet the right attorney. And we're talking about some of the issues that are going on today in 2016 foreclosure. And again, we are with Kelly Bosecker, attorney litigator out of Tampa, Florida. So, you know, Kelly, this kind of leads into the whole trust scenario, right? What we're seeing are secondary market loans that are really at the heart of foreclosure. Deutsche Bank as trustee for some trust, Wells Fargo or Bank of New York Mellon. You know, we're seeing all of these trustees for trust. And you know, like I know, that many of these loan documents never made it into the trust, let alone many of these trusts were never funded. These are some New York common law or Delaware common law entities that were, you know, created and going to be created, et cetera. But none of these loans transferred in. Do you think these servicers are playing the paper shell game and taking advantage, or still taking advantage of borrowers?
Anthony, absolutely. Oh my gosh. I mean, it all goes back to, you know, how this whole thing started. The banks oversold loans, sold loans to people that shouldn't have had loans, overappraised properties. When those loans started in default, what the banks did and why they got in so much trouble with the federal government is they took these bad loans that weren't paying, they marketed them as good loans, and sold them to Wall Street. Then as good loans. Then when Wall Street got them and they weren't paying, it caused the collapse of the economy, the banks, and the real estate market. And absolutely, I have never, ever seen a case in any of the hundreds of cases that I have handled where the loan was properly transferred to a securities trust. In almost all of the cases, there's a pooling and servicing agreement and a trust agreement and all kinds of other things that say that there's a depositor in addition to the lender. There's a depositor, and the lender has to transfer the loan to the depositor, who then has to transfer the loan to the trust prior to the trust closing date, which is typically 2005, 2006, 2007, maybe 2008. None of that was done. We have endorsements on notes that leave out people that were in the chain of title transfer. We have assignments of mortgage trying to document a transfer that was allegedly happened in 2006 or 2007, and it's dated in 2011. They totally disregard all of the legal requirements for the trust. And Anthony, our problem has been in a lot of other states, it's been very well recognized, especially in New York and California and some in Texas, that you have to file the requirements for the trust in order to claim a right to that loan. Well, right. only in the last year have the Florida courts even recognized that that's an issue. Because prior to that, the banks were arguing pursuant to, I think it's the Castillo case, C-A-S-T-I-L-L-O, and from
third
the third DCA.
Right.
You're familiar with that case?
Yeah, very familiar.
So based on the Castillo case, which basically said, you know, hey, borrower, you're not a beneficiary or a party to this pooling and servicing agreement or this trust agreement. You can't make that argument. And the courts in Florida backed that up. And it's been a long, hard fight. I have been fighting this proper transfer to the securities trust issue from day one since I started taking these cases. And finally, thanks to the fourth DCA in South Florida, who has issued some decisions which clearly state and acknowledge that a proper transfer to the trust is an issue, have we been finally getting some decent decisions.
And that's a good point. Some, you know, one of those decisions basically saying that there was no evidence submitted to show that the depositor even had the intent of transferring the loan to the trust. So there are certainly some arguments to be made there as to whether or not trust documents are relevant in a foreclosure defense case. And that's a great point. And I'm glad that you bring all of that to light, because what we're seeing today is very, very different from what we were seeing in 2007, 2008, 2009 moving forward. A lot of case law that is benefiting people. You know, we've watched the state of Florida, as an example, move through saying that if you're not a party to the documents, then you're not entitled to raise them. That argument has changed somewhat, and the District Court of Appeals throughout the state of Florida are now recognizing that if you are claiming your authority stems from these trust documents, then those trust documents are admissible as to determining whether or not you were in fact authorized, or if the documents actually moved according to the trust documents. So absolutely, and I would also advocate that Kelly has been a force in the courtroom litigating that issue and trying to bring that issue forward, among other attorneys as well throughout the state of Florida who advocate that argument. So you touched on it. You said, you know, billions of dollars in settlements, but this was this is over $11 trillion, right? So this is, you know, the banks have made over $11 trillion in these deals, and they've only paid out maybe a trillion plus. So, and nobody's gone to jail. So when we say fraud, you know, fraud closure versus foreclosure, no one's gone to jail, Kelly. I mean, you know, for the passionate pro se, for the passionate borrower, the homeowner that's fighting to keep the American dream alive, fighting to keep their family together, fighting not to get divorced from their spouse, fighting for their kids' bedrooms. I mean, when you look at that fight and you look at the reality that none of the people responsible for this, you know, this housing crisis and the next wave of housing crisis and the next financial meltdown that we're about to experience in the next few months to come, when you look at all of that and you see that no one is going to jail, what does fraud really mean if you're going to raise it in the courtroom? I mean, what does it really mean to a borrower, somebody that you know, wants to advocate this fraud, you know, against the banks to a judge? If no one's going to jail, what's the benefit? Is there a benefit?
Anthony, it's a travesty is all I can say. And, you know, the latest kind of offshoot is go see The Big Short. It's one of the biggest selling movies of the year, and it's all about what the mortgage business did that I briefly touched on. And so now the movie companies and the actors, et cetera, all of the well-to-bes are making more money. But it's really a tragedy because that's why I try to do the best that I can. Somebody's got to speak up. Somebody's got to speak up. How can it be that all these violations occurred, all this money is changing hands, and the borrowers are still losing their homes? How can that be? Where are those trillions of dollars going? Who's spending them? On what? This whole thing, if the government would just actually do something that mattered and say everybody's going to get a principal reduction mortgage, that would solve the problem. But that's never going to happen because we the people don't stand up enough, and it's very hard to stand up. But it's really just not fair. That's all I can say.
The greatest, I call it the greatest robbery of all time. The greatest robbery of all time. Not only did they make over $11 trillion, they paid out, you know, a trillion, less than 10%. I mean, in fines, they kept the remaining balance, and nobody went to jail. I mean, how beautiful is that? You know, reverse that for a second.
And
seems like.
It's even bigger than that too, Anthony. We have a very likely presidential candidate who, you know, still refuses to produce billing records from a law firm that was substantially involved in the savings and loan crisis 20 years ago. That's going to probably be elected our new president.
Well, we're not going to jump into politics on Who Stole Your Loan Radio.
We can't
do that just yet. Not yet. We may dedicate an episode to politics when we can nail down some better Republican. You know, we got to watch some of these Republican candidates fall off the trail just a little bit and kind of hone it down to which candidates really are of substance and
And the problem isn't just on one side; it's on both sides. I mean, sure. I'm not particularly picking on any party. The problem is our system. It's not the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. It's the whole system, and it's not a Republican or Democrat that makes the difference. It's got to be an individual person, and it's such a big thing that I don't even know how to address it.
Well, so that's a good point. But do you think that the individual person that stands up, say the borrower, the homeowner stands up for themselves, but then you see a judge, you know, really chastise them and shoot them down? I mean, you see judges day in and day out throughout the state of Florida enter judgment in favor of the bank with little to no evidence. I mean, literally just giving away homes to anyone who dare claim and say that the home should be theirs other than the borrower, completely, you know, ignoring the fact that, you know, a borrower may have paid out in principal and interest over, you know, $200,000, may have very well already paid the current market value of the loan in monthly mortgage payments up until the foreclosure, and literally just give these homes away to anyone who dare file a pleading. Why, you know, talk about the judges for a second. And by no means do I want to get you in trouble with any judges. Yeah, you know, I certainly don't want to talk, names of bad judges versus names of good judges. You know, we've seen them. But from a general standpoint, why do you think the judges are so anti-borrower, anti-homeowner, when clearly this is an epidemic? Foreclosure is by far an epidemic across the country. Why do they still view borrowers, homeowners, families as deadbeats? I mean, why even enter final judgment and completely not adjudicate cases on the merits? I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Anthony, it's one of the most frustrating things I've ever experienced in my life. I don't understand why the judges won't make the banks just follow the law. That's all we're asking for, is if you want to foreclose, follow the laws. Show that you are entitled to collect this debt. I can't explain it. In winning a foreclosure case is all about the judge, and there are only about 15, maybe 20%, maybe 10%, somewhere between 10 and 20% of the judges that will even listen to a defendant. I have been in front of so many judges that I have never seen rule for a defendant. Hundreds of cases, never rule for a defendant. It doesn't matter. The best case that I ever had, I presented to a judge in Volusia County. I have never seen that judge rule for a defendant. I think there are a number of factors. I think, number one, the banks are very powerful. It all comes back to that. The system is very powerful. Number two, I think the judges have in their the foreclosure case is a case in equity, and that means what's fair. The other part of that is the burden of proof in a foreclosure case is a preponderance of the evidence. That is not like in a criminal case, beyond a reasonable doubt. It means basically 51%. So the bank only has to prove to the judge 51% that they're entitled to bring the foreclosure case. Combine that with the equitable nature that someone has borrowed money, has not paid it back, and continues to enjoy their property. I think that influences the judges. But what the judges are ignoring is that that's all fine and dandy. But is it fair for a lender not to follow the law and not to properly prove that they have the right to bring the foreclosure case and still win? I don't think so.
Well, case in equity, and you're right. Civil, you know, look, these are civil cases. Preponderance of the evidence versus beyond reasonable doubt, criminal. Absolutely, and I totally agree. But let me ask you: do you think that foreclosure defense attorneys play a part in allowing judges to be so biased when a foreclosure defense attorney, as an example, fails to paint the right picture for the judge? A perfect example: when you turn around and you say to a judge, "Your Honor, you know, this is a court of equity," and let me just start out by pointing out that my client has made $284,000 in mortgage payments throughout the life of this loan. Okay, The current market value of the property is $265,000. We are here in a foreclosure case today to talk about whether or not somebody should still receive an additional $613,000 in interest, and whether or not this particular plaintiff is that party entitled to that interest. We are not talking about a deadbeat borrower. We are not talking about somebody who doesn't want to pay their loan. They've made $284,000 in mortgage payments. In effect, they've already paid off the balance of the current market value of the property today. Okay? Do you think that because foreclosure defense attorneys are not really speaking that type of language so that a judge can, really look at and want to adjudicate? In other words, do you think that foreclosure defense attorneys are creating the right angles to sway a judge to adjudicate a case on the merits? Do you think that maybe some of the foreclosure defense attorneys and their lack of ability to litigate plays a part in judges remaining biased in their decisions?
Well, I can't really say that, I can't say what's affecting the judges. Because I'm just not certain, but I do think that because of a lot of the tactics that foreclosure defense attorneys take that I have seen, that they're not properly advocating for their case. I don't know that they really believe that their client is entitled to win. I mean, I think a lot of people in America, say somebody shouldn't be able to keep their house when they don't pay. Well, why are they not paying? A majority of my clients aren't paying because 5 years ago the economy collapsed and they lost their house. I mean, they lost their job. They've continually tried to work out arrangements with the banks. And when they contact their lender initially, the lender says, well, I can't help you until you're 3 payments behind. Well, 3 payments behind, you're in default, and then you really can't catch up because they won't let you make a payment. And they basically force you into foreclosure. Anthony, I think that that your comment about, taking to the judge, Your Honor, here's the payments that we've made on our house to date. Here's what our house is worth. I mean, I think that is an absolutely fantastic argument. I haven't seen that made very much in a foreclosure case, and I think it's definitely a great argument and something that should be seriously considered in order to show the judge the true equity of the situation.
Absolutely, because judges do tend to fall back on that statement. This is a court of equity. So, equity, what's the phrase, and you may know it best, equity does what equity, or equity something, I forget the phrase that they use, but the point being is that if you point out to the court the consideration that the borrower has paid, and analyze that to the current market value of the property, and then turn to the plaintiff and say, okay, now show me what you've put out. Show me the consideration that you've paid. You're not the originator of this loan. You're not the party that, quote unquote, funded this loan transaction. So show me the consideration that you put up for you to stand here today. This is a court of equity. Here's what we put up. Look, Your Honor, we've put up $284,000 in mortgage payments over the last 3 years. I want to see what they've put up. And then from an equity standpoint, I mean, if we had to root out the bias of the judge, I would think that equity would be the first place that attorneys would look to root out that issue and put that in front of the judge. And I think that changes the dynamic of the judge's view of the case, because ultimately every foreclosure defense tactic, right, is to show that the party who's claiming to have standing doesn't have any standing at all. And as you try to dig into these loan documents and you try to dig into the transfers and so on, and you're here before a judge, a court of equity, and you're talking about consideration down a transfer chain of ownership and seeing none presented in discovery, none presented in the pleadings to the court, no consideration. But here we are, Your Honor. You know how we know? They've already admitted it. It's start at the beginning of their complaint. They've alleged that a default occurred on such and such date. Well, this loan originated back in such and such. And for X amount of months, over X amount of years, this is the amount that was. That's equity. That's a true equity argument. Don't you agree?
I do. I think it's a great argument, and it's something that I certainly will be using going forward. I can tell you that. You know, unfortunately, I just, I mean, there are a lot of really, excuse me, I've got a frog. There are a lot of really good foreclosure defense lawyers that I've seen. And there are others that, you know, I don't see that often. And, you know, who knows, general attorneys that pick up cases, and I'm not going to criticize them. But I think that the argument that you're presenting to show, you know, hey, look, this is what we've got into it, is a really great theory to try to show the judge that, you know, if this is equity, look what we've paid. And I also, you know, the thing that the problem is, Anthony, is that they're on these transfers of the loans. I mean, that loan has been divided up I don't know how many times. I mean, and we're talking servicing rights, we're talking investors, we're talking sub-servicers, partial investors, depositors. I mean, it's kind of like a mutual fund account. And in my early years as a lawyer, one of my jobs was to write disclosure statements for mutual funds of the fees. Now, you talk about something, okay, because those fees are divided 20 million different ways between
sure.
20, you know, and so it's really, really hard. And it's virtually impossible to find out what the person who's claiming that they're plaintiff actually has invested in the loan and
sure.
and what their actual status is. Are they a servicer? Are they a sub-servicer? Are they a master servicer? Are they an investor? Are they a sub-investor? I mean, it's really kind of crazy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Kelly, I want to thank you for coming on to the show. Everybody, again, Kelly Bosecker, attorney, litigator. I won't just say attorney. I would say litigator out of the state of Florida, Tampa area. She handles foreclosure defense and litigation work throughout the state of Florida. She can be reached again at 813-334-1745. That's 813-334-1745. You can also reach her by email at kelly@bosecerlaw.com. And that's kelly@bosecerlaw.com. Kelly, thank you so much for coming on to the show. I just want to point out to, attorneys and just anyone in general who wants to learn more about foreclosure defense and strategies and how to get that dismissal, how to get an award of attorney fees and a satisfaction of a mortgage or an award for damages, join the webinar. Join the AMA webinar. You can find us anywhere. You can do a search at anthonymartinezexpert.com to get the link to the webinar. You can get it here on the show if you look at the body of the summary. There's a link there for you to also get into the webinar. There we'll also talk about defensive pleading strategies and discovery strategies and tactics, as well as the value of trial so that you're not afraid of actually going to trial. Again, this is Anthony Martinez, and I just want to thank everyone for coming out. Kelly, thank you so much. Thank you for everybody that is tuned in. Kelly, any closing statements, anything you want to say to the people?
I don't think so, except keep up the fight. We've got to keep up the fight. We've got to stand up for our rights. And, Anthony, thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. All right, everyone, you have a great night. And see you next week for Who Stole Your Loan Radio. Thank you and good night.